Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, angry music calls for angry people. And joining me, not so much angry, but his stomach hurts, Jeff Kenny from San Clemente. Jeff, how are you?
Good, besides that.
You know, Robert E. Lee was having a bad stomach up in Gettysburg, so don't make any big decisions here. As long as your stomach's acting up.
Yeah, I was going to order everybody in San Clemente to charge Oceanside, but I may rethink that one.
You might want to. Oh, yeah. Where's Stuart? Stuart? My stomach hurts. And then from New York, where he's being a great son and went to see his dad for Father's Day, Will Costantini. And Will's kind of a little bit irritated because he hasn't yelled at anybody all day. Did you remedy that over Father's Day dinner and yell at somebody, or are you still having not yelled at somebody?
No, I my dream is that we get to that sometime in the next hour.
All right. Well, hey, look, there's a better chance than not that that will happen. And then joining us is he was in a state of unauthorized absence last Thursday, but through the miracles of modern technology, he joined us today. Tim Lynch, Timmy, how are you?
Mac, thanks very much for asking. And happy Father's Day to you.
Well, thank you. Happy Father's Day to everybody. Timmy, can you explain to everybody, because people were interested, like, what happened to Lynch? Like, so did something, you know, nefarious happen? Were you overcome by events, or what happened?
No. I saw you said we're going to go an hour early at 1900. I said, Roger that. And I went about my business, and in my head, we were going at 2000. And I was sitting here at 1900, but I didn't have the Skype turned on, and I rarely have my phone turned on because nobody ever calls me on a damn thing. It's just annoying. And I sat here blissfully ignorant that I was missing out on an hour. And I had a lot to bitch about last week, too. It's very disappointing. So I apologize.
And here everybody thought, like, wow, like, where's Lynch? Where's Lynch? Right? He was just sitting there. He was just sitting there.
Story of my life. Just sitting here minding my own business.
I don't know about that. Okay. The reason you guys are on Monday is because, something that, you know, an event that has been unfolding for the last couple months came to a conclusion late Friday afternoon, early evening, as they are wont to do in the city of Washington, D.C., with the announcement by the United States Navy and the Department of Defense that the Navy upheld the firing of the captain of the USS Theodore Roosevelt, and that Captain Crozier would not be reinstated. So I wanted to have you guys on because, I mean, it's a pretty big deal. I wanted to kind of go around the table. And first thing is, in this issue, what broke squelch for you? What was important for you relative to the issue? And we'll start with, we got to start at the Naval Academy, so Will has to go first. So, Will, what broke squelch, or what things, maybe possibly multiple, broke squelch on this issue for you?
Yeah, going back in time to when the event happened, I'll just talk about one thing. It's just the way it got communicated. I had never heard of sending a letter. The language in the letter was a little bit melodramatic. The reporting at the time is that his immediate superior in the chain of command, who lived on the same ship, was not completely read in. And so when it came out, and it came out in the press, I said to myself at the time, that's deliberate. You don't write a letter, and when you communicate to the chain of command on issues like this, this is not the kind of stuff that leaks. And so I thought that that was absolutely a fireable offense back then.
All right. And so the thing that broke Squelch for you was simply the way that he did it.
Yeah. Yeah. When we get out to what Gil Day said, you know, I'll have some more comments, but that's, if I remember right, when this broke seemingly 10 years ago, but it's probably what, 60 days or something.
Yeah.
That was the immediate thing for me.
Got it. All right, Tim, Doc Lynch, what, former member of the United States Navy, just so everybody knows, we're bipartisan in this program. Jeff Kennedy and I are the only people narrow enough to only be Marines. So Tim, your thoughts when this thing went down, your thoughts on what happened?
I think the first comment you made about it way back then was he relieved himself by sending that email out in such an indiscreet manner that it got into the press. And so I think that I've never – that was a correct assessment in my mind. I don't think any of us would argue that. But if you look at the letter – so I went back to when this happened. So this is March 31st. On my blog, I was already for 7 days saying that these the IFR is way, way low and things, you know, I was able to access enough information to confidently predict that it was the elderly that was targeted. We had already seen this. And in the letter, Captain Closure specifically draws lessons from the Princess Diamond, but not the most impressive ones, the most important one. He says that, you know, we now know that if they had evacuated the ship, they would have got 600 and something less, blah, blah, blah. But the important number was the number of fatalities, 1.7%, all of them over the age of any of his crew members. So the degree of hysteria that he was generating, putting, we don't have to let our sailors die, was unwarranted. Even when you go back to what we knew back then, this is before the big surge was supposed to hit. But there's enough information out there for you to deduce that you should institute a proper quarantine. And that means nobody gets off the ship. That's how quarantine started. And I don't understand why he thought it was appropriate to have 7,000 people put in hotels in Guam and then say, hey, we'll get back up the snuff here really quick. I think that's delusional. And I think it was a shot aimed more at the administration than necessarily having to do with his people, only by the nature of the letter and the fact that it got into his hometown newspaper. I think it was a hashtag resistance move. And I said that at the time, and I'm sticking to that assessment.
Jeff?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Will and Tim said. That this, but that's not what really broke Squelch. And I thought, here we have yet again another modern example of senior officers, senior field grade officers, you know, acting unprofessionally and selfishly, you know, and what he did. But what really broke Squelch, as you say, for me, was when the Secretary of the Navy, acting Secretary of the Navy, fired him. I'm thinking, how many dudes are between these guys? And like Will mentioned, the fact that his immediate boss was like 20 paces down the passageway from him, you know, but I thought to myself, you know, that's even worse off than what the guy did, because it's unmilitary. It's unmilitary what the guy did and sent out the stupid emails with all those people CC'd on it. It was bad that, you know, that nobody, you know, his immediate superior didn't do anything about it or wasn't even involved. It was crappy that the Secretary of the Navy went to the ship, as a matter of fact, you know, basically made a spectacle of himself. And some military that the admirals that were standing in between didn't do anything, it seems. So the whole thing is, you know, it's a depressing display of unmilitary behavior. And what's one of our pillars of our defenses is carrier battle groups. That's what broke Squelch for me.
Yeah, you know, for me at the time, it was that the Secretary of the Navy and his chief of staff are in communication with essentially a colonel. Like, what the hell is going? What is going on? And then that's not good enough somehow or other for this guy. And then the next thing though was, why is the Secretary of the Navy relieving that guy? Right? If we're, you know, if we're a company. And, you know, and I'm the company commander, and I say, hey, your corporal or your sergeant is blah blah blah, and I'm gonna fire his ass, right? What would a good lieutenant say, sir? I'll fire him.
All yeah,
right? Right. I mean, that's mm-hmm. But so you have the strike group CO, you have the fleet CO, you have the PAC CO. Right, yeah. And I'm not sure if there's somebody else in there too.
Yeah,
right.
The only thing that would have been more ridiculous is if Dr. Fauci fired him.
but I mean, it was just she looked at it, and you're just like, it was another one of those. And again, it pains me to say this, but it's the continuation of the shit show that the United States Navy has become relative to leadership, and you're watching this thing going. You've got to be kidding me. And so, to me, the shit showish nature, right, along with, like, where are the guys on scene and why wouldn't they step in front of the Secretary of the Navy and say, hey, look, sir, I understand your sentiment, but that's got to come from me. No, Admiral, it's got to come from me. Okay, let's go down to the boxing ring and let's settle this like men, right? You know?
You are talking about the Navy.
Hey, you guys had – do they still have the boxing thing, the smokers there? Or have they done away with that? Is that too barbarian?
No. When I was enlisted –
I not pay any attention to what happens at the Naval Academy.
Okay.
It's too painful. Oh.
No, I mean, you're not the only guy that's graduated from that says that. So, okay, so that's once around the table – anybody have any further comments about the relief? And one more thing. This is just a general comment. You see, this would not have been an issue but for that video. And one of the things that you see in our culture is the absolute power of video now. It is everywhere. That was about 120 sailors on a ship of 4,800.
Yeah.
Nice. And that video of them chanting his name, right, made this thing an international incident. I mean, and so, I mean, just again, something that is a sign of the times. Hey, even Vladimir Putin has forbid the Russian military to take cell phones with them wherever they go. Exactly. So, all right. Now, in the meantime, so there's Gilday makes a recommendation based on a preliminary inquiry that Crozier be given the command back, right? And then Milley, Esper, not sure who and what sequence, say, slow your roll. Okay, slow your roll. We need to do an investigation. They do the investigation, and now the investigation comes out. Your thoughts on all of that, Will?
Yeah, so, Gilday, first of all, Gilday took away my line. My line was that he got fired because of the way it got communicated. Gilday says, no, that wasn't it. Gilday says he believes that the firing him was proper because he put crew comfort over crew safety. So I think what that means is the CO wanted all those sailors to go to hotel rooms. And didn't want it to be on cots in the gym, social distance, or actually physically distant from each other. And Gilday said, based on the results of the investigation, if he had not been relieved to date, that Gilday would be recommended. So I find that interesting. He negates the narrative of the time, is that he got fired because of the way he communicated. And he actually puts it on a substantive issue. He was more worried about comfort than the actual safety. And that also, that doesn't surprise me. That goes along with the track record of the recent Navy, I would say. 'Cause when he's talking crew safety, that means you look people in the eye and you tell them what to do. And they don't always like it. But I don't want to go to the gym and be on a cot. I'd rather be in a hotel. Well, I don't know where this thing would have been if it wouldn't have been in the media. I think that the CNO comes out and puts it on something of substance, and he puts his marker down on that as well, which I think is a big deal.
All right, let me ask you, but he that contradicts his prior statement based on his preliminary inquiry. Should we hold him?
Yeah.
Does that diminish Gilday in any way, shape, or form?
Well, Gilday, and I watched his press conference on YouTube today. It was on Friday, and he says the preliminary, I don't even know if it was a preliminary inquiry, but the preliminary investigation that had been done did not have the depth to show him these things. So based on that, he would have recommended the reinstatement. Now that the adults in the room did the full investigation, and it comes out that the sequence is not necessarily as described by Crozier, things were already in motion, but he wasn't happy with the speed that they've been executed. Talking to CNO was not happy with the way the CEO of the ship and the strike group commander plan to get those guys off into less than 5-star accommodations. That's what changes his mind and says, while they were, you know, Crozier was blowing the trumpet about crew safety, he didn't do everything that he was well within his power while at sea to get ready to actually take care of safety. So Gilday, I mean, it takes a big man, right, to admit I was wrong. He mitigates a little bit by saying I had incomplete information.
Right.
But it is interesting when you're a 4-star admiral, at some point, when are you going to make sure that you got complete information? Well, he took the civilian secretary to kick him in the nuts and tell him to get better information. So I don't know that it doesn't diminish him in my eyes. He basically stands up and says, if I knew then what I knew now, wouldn't have made that recommendation. And in fact, if he hadn't been relieved, I'd relieve him now. I'd recommend relief. So, hey, I was stupid. I'm smart now. I'm making a better recommendation.
All right. Got it. Timmy, your thoughts on this final resolution?
It would have been very bizarre to see a guy who's been relieved reinstated in command. I don't think I've ever heard of that, and I don't think every guy that's been relieved has been correctly relieved. I've never heard of a do-over. I don't see how they could have done it. It's interesting how they came about with the information to make the final determination. When you and I and every one of our audience who's been in the military knows, as soon as he sent the email, he relieved himself. That nobody's going to survive doing airing your dirty laundry out in public like that. And I fundamentally don't even understand what the hell he was talking about with taking people off the ship. The concept of quarantine was you keep people on the ship for 40 days to prove that they're not sick. When we had an outbreak of a Salmonella paratyphoid, we would isolate the guys that were actively sick, but everybody else wasn't going anywhere because we didn't know how bad this was spread. And we're talking a virus. To assume that you take the people that have tested positive off this ship, that you're taking the reservoir of viral contamination off this ship, is anti-scientific. If the virus is on the ship, it's on the ship. You're kind of screwed, man, because of the way that the air systems work. There's nothing you can do. At the time that you start getting infected sailors, you've got the full dose. I don't understand why they're moving people off that ship at all. They weren't that sick. What, they had one pass away, a couple need to be in the ICU. Most everybody was walking around fine. And the quarantine idea is to keep people the hell off the land when they're on a ship that's got an infection going. So I'm confused as to why anybody thought it was appropriate to take people off the ship to begin with.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Tim, the counter argument is that in the third week of March, you know, half the world was saying this is a black death. And I think that the guy that died had significant other conditions, and I think he died fairly soon. And so they thought they were at the front edge of the bow wave, and they were panicking. But so was everyone else in the world.
You're not supposed to panic when you're a Navy.
No. I think it's the exact opposite. if it had been the Black Death, if it was something that was so virulent that like half the people that got it were going to die, you think they're going to let anybody off that ship? There's not a goddamn chance in hell.
But Tim, again,
because we have the money, again, we have the money and ability to right, do this.
Again, in those, I don't want to walk through the eyes I'm looking at now. I was as skeptical as anybody in March, but I was a significant minority. I think you guys were as well. But the powers that be around the world were saying it's a fucking Black Death. And so we have to get people in a place where they're isolated from each other. And I think they were talking about moving everyone off, not just – because there was no test.
Yeah. That was my understanding.
They wanted to get everyone out and separate them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the truth is this. They didn't do this during the Black Death. Matter of fact, this is the only time I know of that they thought it was a good idea to deal with disease by quarantining everybody from everybody else. It's ludicrous.
Jeff, and I'm not arguing that.
The biggest thing they do is isolate the at-risk people, and then everybody else, you know, tries to deal with it. It's never – questionable at best, the whole strategy of lockdowns and so forth. And so
I don't want to get into that.
I agree with that.
Science,
100%. Yeah. I'm just
but
saying.
I thought so it's like everyone so the whole in thing the world. Is like based on a false premise. And people are using it to their advantage that have nothing to do with the disease. And I think that's what Captain Crozier was doing.
But I go back. I agree with Will.
I don't know what he knew
at that time, right? You know, if you're not a virologist, you know, you're reading and you're watching to what the world and what's being said, you know. And to me, when you read, I mean, my understanding was everybody was going to come off the ship and go into, you know, he wanted them in hotels. So anyway.
But I mean, that doesn't, that still doesn't make sense to me. You know, that's like, that's the safe move. You know, even look, you know, the Black Death.
Yeah, but Jeff, I don't want to go into the science of whether you disagree or we're talking about the command decision.
No, it's not whether I disagree or not. It's like, it just doesn't make sense to me that would be, you know, why would he panic? And first of all, he's a captain of one of our primo warships, not supposed to panic. Right. And then his boss is right down the hall, and he's not even involved. So the whole thing is, you know, there's no defense for the guy. I don't give a shit. You know, there's just no defense for him. You know, I mean, if anybody had a reason to panic, it would be the guy who's in charge of Quezon, you know, Colonel Lowndes. He didn't. And here's this guy. He has one guy get sick enough to actually die, and he's ready to, you know, pull a fire alarm. I don't know.
Oh, he pulled a fire alarm. No, okay, so yeah. Jeff, what about so your thoughts on the final resolution of this?
Well, I think all's well that ends well. I mean, I admire that guy that that Gilday for standing up too. I think that was he's saying, hey, look, now we got enough information in this thing. It turns out that it wouldn't be proper to put this guy back in command of the ship or any other command.
Yeah, that was
he
interesting.
Said that. So, I think that was it's the best kind of outcome you could get at this point.
Timmy, you were going to make a point? You were going to hop in there?
Yeah, no, all I was going to say is it was when Crozier wrote his letter, he cited the princess, Diamond Princess. And the Diamond Princess was a perfect example of how this wasn't as virulent as people were saying it was because he only had 1.7 IFR. That's the flu. So I think there was enough there to allow him not to panic. And I think that if it was really as virulent as the Black Death, that nobody would have let anybody off that ship.
Yeah, but Timmy, if we go back to that time, you were one of the few people that were arguing that. Okay.
No, I understand. I'm just saying. He's citing the Diamond Princess. Right there is the information right in front of him. I think that should have given him a more than a good enough reason to calm the hell down. That's all.
I mean, to me, when the chairman and if Esper's in the room, somebody had to look at somebody and say, there's no fucking way that we're going to reinstate this guy. Man. Do you know what that is going to do to everybody that gets relieved? Right.
Yeah.
Inside the fucking DOD. So I don't care what you have to find. I don't care what you have to pin it on. okay? That guy is not going to get that fucking command back. There is no way, or else we will open up a can of worms. You know, as Timmy, I think Timmy said, I've never heard of anybody whoever got relieved getting their command back. And if you do this, you will open up, holy hell. Now, I have mixed feelings about Gilday. I understand Will's point, and I think it's valid that, you got to give him credit because he isn't, based on the preliminary, he was quoted in public as saying, I would be inclined, right, to turn him to the command. So to me, what that says is, or the way I feel about that statement is, that doesn't give me confidence in him, right? If he's worth four stars as a CNO, right, you've got to fucking know that you can't say shit like that. You better be sure when it comes out of your mouth. So to Admiral Gilday, don't fuck it up anymore because, in my opinion, you're on a short leash, right? You screwed this up, in my opinion. You made it harder than it had to be, and you did that for whatever reason. I don't know if it was you were reacting to public pressure because, the New York Times is writing about it. The Washington Post is writing about it. It's on the national news every night. Oh, my God. Your job is to do the right thing when everybody around you is doing the wrong thing. Your job is to be the custodian of the United States Navy and do your part here. So to me, Admiral Gilday, you're on a short leash, and I think this does diminish him. Whenever you have to do an about face in public, as that guy, I think it does diminish you, and I think he better keep his powder clean, or else bad things going to happen. Thoughts?
Yeah, I would say two things. Item one: the description of Milley or Esper laying the law down, and this guy can't come back. I'll bet a paycheck that didn't happen.
Yeah.
That might happen inside a mafia crime family where you can keep people loyal. But inside the Pentagon, you can't keep people loyal. And that would be undue command influence that anyone with a grievance in the future would bring out. I think that the evidence in this must have been reasonably overwhelming to do that. And I don't disagree with you about Gilday being diminished. Yeah, because he should have been the adult in the room, and there is no reason to be stampeded by the New York Times. They can't do a damn thing. And I will say something about the science of this now, though. 5,000 people on a ship in a Petri dish. 1,000 of them got it, 20%. One died. 0.1%. It basically tells you if you're under the age of 50 and reasonably healthy, it can't kill you.
Yeah.
Do you realize that that is the only active duty fatality in the United States military?
Is it really?
I did not.
I read back then that this guy had some other significant underlying conditions. Yeah. I could be wrong on that.
No, I've read in a number of places.
That being said,
what comorbidity factors were high. And take that for, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. But
I just talked to my mom today. She's a retired registered nurse, and my brother's an active respiratory therapist. He says the thing, it's going to come out here anytime. It's the flu. It's the fucking flu. And unless you're like what Will just described, you might get a little sick, but you're probably going to be okay. And this thing has just gone off the rails. And as far as back then, even then, there's people saying, what's this lock? The whole reaction to the thing was hysterical right from the get-go.
Right.
More than any other, any other disease we've hit in memory.
All right. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Any saved rounds?
Well, I got to tell you, Mac, I don't think that, we've been talking about the tin can sailors and Captain Evans and all those destroyer escort captains. And I don't think one of these admirals or captains in this story would have had the balls to turn this damn destroyer back around and make a run at the Japanese Navy with empty guns or empty torpedo tubes. just to provide cover and smoke for his fellow sailors. I sure as hell would like to find some more captains like that.
Let alone to go back the second time or the third time.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know this guy Kozier, wouldn't you? I don't understand. I'm very distraught at our senior military leadership these days because I don't understand what they're saying half of the time. thing with Milliot is talking to the War College graduates was embarrassing in that he talked nothing about military stuff and everything about how to manage perceptions in D.C. And it's
everything about himself.
Institutional racism. God, it's just disgusting.
Well,
yeah, but you know, the culture of the Navy, is not the culture of the Navy in the beginning of World War II was very much Admiral Nelson, you know, words of the effect of you can do no wrong if you lay your ship alongside that of the enemy. That was not the culture of the Naval Academy when I went in the early 80s. You know, the war fighters in the Navy then were the Vietnam POWs. And that is not remotely the culture of the United States Navy today. I think there are elements of it in the Navy because there's individuals there. But the culture of the organization has got nothing to do with enemy in sight, right full rudder, all ahead flank, prepare to attack. That's just not them. So.
No, we were talking.
We should not be surprised.
This string of disaster after disaster after disaster.
That's their culture. What are they focused on right now? They are in a self-flagellation exercise because they've self-identified themselves as a racist organization. It's beyond beyond comprehension. It brings anger in me because one way or another, it's still my favorite Navy in the whole world.
Right.
But we're going to go through this insanity. They're not focused as an organization on defending the nation. When I was in the Pentagon and Ray Mabus was the secretary, they were not focused on the wars we were fighting and all the other things that were happening. It's just not it. And so there's been two generations of officers that have been raised up in the Navy. I mean, how many of them could tell you what the Reuben James was or the Battle of Lady Gulf?
Yeah.
You know, it's just not of interest.
Yeah, and that's a shame, too, because, like, the guy in the USS Holt, the destroyer during the Mayaguez, I mean, he was a war fighter. Some of those guys who were doing the low intensity, for lack of a better term, fighting with the Iranians in the late 80s and stuff. But those guys there, they learned that, hey, you're not going to get backed up. You know, you're not going to get backed up if something goes wrong, like when that Iranian jet was shot down. So you're right. I mean, that's the depressing thing.
Remember the incident of the two small craft that were taken by the Iranians?
Oh, yeah. That's just
good.
Yeah,
God. Admiral Stockdale was vomiting all over his grave.
Horrible. You
know, so it should not surprise us. It's horrible because it is a nation. But
I think that there's no greater indication of that than Crozier's letter. We are not at war. Sailors do not need to die. If we do not act now, we are failing to properly take care of our most trusted asset, our sailors. Yeah. Right?
He's a fucking drama queen.
Right. I mean, so how does it turn around? I mean,
Gil Day did put a marker down. He said he was more concerned with crew comfort than actually their safety. So he wanted to be liked instead of doing the right thing.
Right.
He said, that's not tolerated. Well, you got to start somewhere. That is a very minute step that's shocking that you would have a guy that gets through the nuclear pipeline to command, the nuclear and aviation pipeline to command an aircraft carrier, that doesn't get that. So maybe the CNO has has recognized that as significant. And also, he basically put on hold the commander's promotion,
right,
and said that those two and the ship's doctor are all up for administrative punishment over this thing. So who knows? Yeah. Maybe he wants to.
I guess what we're saying, what Will is saying, is it could have been worse. He could have gone the other way, and the guy gets his command back. And like you were saying, Mac, all those, you know, all those unsaid but very clear messages are sent about, you know, about discipline and so forth that would just make it even harder for these guys to command, you know, important, you know, vessels and units and so forth. I mean, it could have been worse.
Yeah, Mac, would it have shocked you? Would it have shocked you if Gil Day came out on Friday and said he's going to, after the investigation, recommend the reinstatement?
No,
it would
no.
have disappointed me. It wouldn't have shocked me.
No, no, that's what me. That's what to me. Though, I mean, that's what's so distressing about this is how much of this shit does somebody need to see before they fire the Brown Star Cluster and yeah. say this organization is going to go nose to nose with the Chinese, with the Russians? Yeah. Are you shit? Yeah. Are you shitting me? Does anybody think that we'll come out, you know, on the forward edge of that one?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, how does it change, though? And I think history would tell you it changes when we get our ass kicked.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
let's not talk about history
again. And then I think the females will get off the ships and we'll start training people to drive them properly. And maybe we'll have a second shot. But generally, I don't see how else is this going to change. You need to get your ass kicked a couple of times to understand that you're fucked up.
You know, of interest, since so when I was at Navy, only 16 2/3% of the class could be commissioned into the Marine Corps. And once the war kicked off, the Marine Corps was routinely taking 25% of the class. And wow. I found that interesting because when I went through, I would say that a not insignificant percentage of the people that were commissioned in the Marine Corps were not the material that we wanted. They wanted to avoid being on a ship. 2004, if you got a choice to be in the Navy or be a Marine officer, you know, as a Marine officer, you're going to the fight. And we were taking 25% of those classes, and the Navy basically wouldn't let us take any more than that. So somewhere in the youth of America, at least I was going to the Naval Academy at the time, people were running to the sound of the guns. So I take that as it takes away some of the idea of, you know, the millennial self-centered generation or whatever. I don't know. It says something about people at the Naval Academy, but those guys all ended up in the Marine Corps. So right. Who knows what was left in the Navy? We'll find out in 15 years.
Right. Any other thoughts on, I mean, how do you change this? And so this, to me, the more you see of it, you know, from the collisions at sea to the Fat Leonard stuff, it is this horizontal theme of failed, soft leadership. And you know, we haven't been in the fight. You know, our aviation elements have, but the surface Navy essentially has not. And we've essentially been conducting this, social experiment in the military, how we can make it softer and easier for people to serve and not be inconvenienced. That's my words. That's my perception. And let me tell you, and I went to sea as ship's company, you know, in the 1980s. And there were still hard asses in the Black Shoe Navy. And, you know, the Brown Shoe Navy was considered to be, you know, the air wing, and they're not like the Black Shoe Navy. The Black Shoe Navy, if you were, you know, if you were an 06 or in the 80s, you know, you grew up in the Navy in the 60s. And you were, right? And that was a hard Navy. There were still guys in the 60s that had been around for World War II. And so they were hard. I got invited to dine with the Admiral in the Admiral's mess out on Gonzo Station. I get this plate invitation, right? You're invited to dine with Admiral Tony Less and the flag officers and chiefs of, you know, carrier, air group, whatever the fuck we were, the Ranger and our escorts. So, you know, I put on my dress blue Bravos and I go up there, right? And I'm sitting at his table with Admiral S, the destroyer squadron commanders there, the Commodore, as he was known. And so, you know, we're sitting there talking and they're including me in the conversation. And so Admiral S says, Lieutenant Magner, you got any questions for me? I said, yes, sir, I do. I said, I've been aboard this ship now for over a year. And I want to ask you, why doesn't the Navy have a school for its junior officers, like the basic school? Because I see junior officers on this ship that don't know anything about leadership. They get abused in public by the chiefs on this ship. And they don't contribute overall to your mission accomplishment because they're too weak and it doesn't look like they know what they're doing, right? So I'm not going to tell you that that went over like a lead fucking balloon at that dinner table. But you know who took the most exception with it? The fucking Commodore. He looked at me, he goes, hey, Lieutenant, let me tell you something. What you're seeing here, this is not the United States Navy. This is the United States. This is the United States Navy aircraft carrier, right? The culture is skewed by the brown shoes. He said, I would be happy for you to come over if you can. I know you're involved in nuclear weapons security, so I don't know that you can while you're at sea. But he said, if you can, come over to one of my destroyers and you'll see the Black Shoe Navy. He said, but we do it right there. And I was like, whoa. So I don't, wow. How do you change it?
Well, I tell you, I got a couple things to say about that. The this happened before, not with the Navy so much, but with the Army in the beginning of Korea, they were defeated, and there's just no fighting spirit. At the end of the Second World War, before the Army Air Corps became the Air Force, General Doolittle, big hero and deservedly so, was put in charge of this thing called the Doolittle Commission to change most of the civilians who got drafted. Were bitter about their basic training and their basic, you know, integration into the military. They thought it was abusive and, you know, unnecessarily harsh and so forth. And so the Doolittle Commission basically gutted their whole recruit training stuff in the 40s up until 1950. And no swearing, you know, no excessive physical fitness type stuff. And then Task Force Smith and other things happened in the beginning of the Korean War, and they tightened back up. Now, they could do that because we had a draft. A couple of key things keep us from ever being able to do that again. Number one, we don't have the draft anymore. People come in because they're recruited in. They volunteer to come in. And number two, I don't know if we got the sand as a national culture anymore to put up with, you know, what would need to change. Because what we need to change is a lot of people being fired and a lot of people being disciplined. And, you know, that's the way it works with us, carrot and stick. And the carrot isn't very tasty and the stick doesn't hurt right now. So, you know, things aren't looking good for the home team.
All right. Any other thoughts on how it changes?
I'm sticking with we get our ass kicked, then we'll start thinking about it.
Well, that's the depressing part of history, yeah. Because you're exactly right. That is the only way. You know, how does the German military go through their renaissance? They get their asses kicked in the 19th century, and a lot of reform comes out of that son of a bitch. And so I'm afraid that you're right. To me, it's just painful. It's just painful to watch because I think we all, you know, are old enough to, you know, remember going to sea with a hard-ass, you know, United States Navy that could take you anywhere, keep you there for however long you needed to be there, resupply you, do whatever was needed to be done. And they can still do that. But it just seems like these leadership mistakes are so glaring, are so consistent that, I don't know, just extremely, extremely concerning. Hold on one second. I had one more topic I wanted to get to. And,
is it your stomach?
No. If we talk about anybody's stomach, it would certainly, It would certainly be yours. let's talk about a let's talk about statues. The statue of Father Juniper Cerro came down in Los Angeles yesterday. Grant's statue came down, but Grant's wife was a slave owner at some point, if I recall. Will there be question? Will there be a statue standing, you know, in our country when all this is said and done? Will?
Yeah, you know, this is completely predictable, and it would be funny if it, you know, if it wasn't just true. You know, you had significant conservative writers, Rich Lowry, last week, when people brought up, oh, you know, where's this going to stop? George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Rich Lowry, conservative editor of the National Review, said, oh, stop it. And then, boom, over the weekend, they take Grant down. Grant actually inherited a slave from his father.
Who he freed at expense himself.
And so if you allow this discussion, there is no one. Because the people pulling statues down, they're not even in the discussion. They are an anarchy, you know, crazy mob. So it doesn't matter who the statue is. And the idea that people have entertained this, and this is where, you know, I think I said last week, I sort of, you know, the Confederate base, the naming of the base after Confederate generals and all that stuff, I was sort of agnostic about it, except I just didn't like the method.
Yeah.
But here we are, and people think that you can negotiate with the mob. You know, the only way you can negotiate with the mob is when they're looking down the barrel of your 45. Then you can negotiate, and they might listen. But you're going to negotiate with the mob about who could stand up and who can't, because no one on earth can withstand the minute historical scrutiny. And you know, I'll steal this from someone that I know well and care about a lot. He said, you know, the solution to this was a day three in Minneapolis. When they went into the third precinct and it was obvious that the civilian leadership was not going to maintain law and order, then you just invoke the Insurrection Act and send them in. And you know what? This would all be retrospect.
Yep.
The president would have gotten as bad press as he's getting now, but a whole lot of people wouldn't have lost their livelihoods, some their lives, some their freedoms, and a whole lot of statues would still be standing. So this will only stop when people say enough. And unfortunately, I fear it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. People are going to have to look into the edge of the abyss, and we're not there yet.
Timmy?
It seems that the new progressive ideology that's sort of sweeping the revolutionary portions of the country, it's BLM, Antifa, there's other people that are there. They're demanding the death of the four olds. They don't want to see old customs. They don't want to hear about old culture. They think old habits are repulsive and our old ideas are discriminatory. And what's interesting is the four olds was a Chinese campaign that began in 1966. Mao. I think it killed 10 million people. But they're using the exact same wording, the exact same concepts that the Chinese used in a great leap forward. In fact, I've heard the leap forward. And if you think about what they're asking you to do, what they're asking for, this is a bid for adjudicating power. This isn't about protesting. And what they want is their concurring majority faction to have its own set of rules. And that's based in the Confederate Constitution. Those are concepts that Calhoun wrote about. The American independence movement was all about equal opportunity for all. The French one, the Jacobinism, was equal outcomes from all, which is what this new movement is. They want to do away with all the four olds because we're inherently racist. And it's not historically true. It's not It's not close to what observable reality is when you understand our history. So I'm like, Will, I have gone from being sort of amused to all this being confined to Democrat-controlled cities to being greatly concerned about how far this is going to go, because the media and Hollywood and all the forces of our culture, which is upstream of everything, is on their side, unlike during the riots during Rodney King and during the 60s when we were coming up, all those riots. The culture wasn't on the side of the rioters. Now the culture is on the side, clearly on the side of the rioters. And you and I and everybody else were retrograde for believing that this is a great country, probably the greatest it's ever been, which I still firmly believe. But the concepts being espoused today are communist in ideology. They're not going to work. And I just hope it doesn't get to some kind of mass destabilization, because everybody says, well, that's not going to happen in America. I'm not so sure. This is very serious, because there's no way out of it. And Trump, as well as he's doing, he's not going to lead us out of it. You gotta have to have somebody like Wade the Rock Johnson or somebody in charge to try to sort this all out.
He's a pussy, I mean, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm just mentioning something that Joe Rogan threw out. But it's very depressing, because what they're talking about is nonsense. But we can't even get to the point where we can talk about it being nonsense, because nobody wants to hear facts.
Yeah, there's no facts. There's no discussion yet. Jeff?
No discussion.
Yeah, there can't be any compromise to these folks. You gotta refuse to negotiate, refuse to do anything. We should make them re-erect those statues. We should, we need to get some sand back, because this will just get worse and worse until finally there's a guy like Napoleon who, when everybody's equivocation and moral cowardice results in these guys being able to take power of things that they just don't have, you know, it's irrational that they've even gotten this far. You know, we'll end up with a guy like that, because that's the only way these things end. That's how it ended in the French Revolution. Even after Lenin died, his stupid ideas about, about collectivism and everything. You had Joe Stalin, and he was all about murdering people, you know, who got in his way. And that's what will happen if we don't do something. It won't be these jerks. It'll be the jerks who come after them. The first jerks, then you got tyranny. And this has to be done now, or we could lose our whole country. It needs to be dealt with, and they should start with these monuments. I mean, all this stuff, I mean, you could lighten the mood a little bit and say, well, you know, all these guys, they want to change the names of the bases and take down the statues. They're all Democrats, which is true. I mean, when we're talking about Confederates, they're all Democrats, right? And then you could, if you're going to do that, though, you insist, hey, because there's always compromise in America, right? You insist that this has to be done by referendums, by the local government of where that base or where those statues are, not you. Not you just saying, hey, I want to pull this thing down. That's not how we do things in any country. So, you know, you got to do that. And if that's the case, President Trump says, I reserve the right to rename these places. So so Fort Bragg becomes Fort Frank L. Rizzo. And Fort Benning, you know, becomes Fort Dan Quayle. How about that one? Spelled correctly, you know, and you need to hit back, though, and say, you know, we're not going to stand for this. Otherwise, you know, we're going to lose it. It doesn't seem like that's possible, but it is imminently possible. I think I hate it.
I do, too.
Yeah, it feels like totalitarianism. You know, yeah. I don't know. I've never lived in that kind of a system. But, you know, when the truth doesn't matter, when there is no debate of the facts, right, to get to the truth again, and then you have your media isn't concerned about the truth and the facts. They're
right.
They come and you're watching it and you're going, wow, this is what it must feel like when you live in a system that is not based, you know, on things that are true.
Right.
And you're watching. I will, however, say this. I think there's two rails to this. I think that, you know, our big cities will continue to get more liberal, and they will go down this road, and they will fail. Then there will be a backlash. And this country is a pretty close split down the middle, you know, throughout. and it's that middle third. And that middle third is going to watch that, in my opinion, and they are going to say, you know what, this is terrifying, it's ridiculous, and people will pay for it in elections. Yeah. And the other thing I think you're going to see is the beauty of the way our founding fathers crafted the nation. And that is this. If you don't have 60 votes in a Senate, you can't do shit in this nation. And it was designed deliberately like that, right? It was designed deliberately. You can through, you know, population, you can influence whatever you want in the fucking House. But without 60 votes in the Senate, you can't do shit. And so, you know, so that forces everything to the center. It forces everything to the center. And I think that, you know, with that center comes the truth, comes the hearings that I think force us to confront the inconvenient truths of this whole discussion.
Right. And you're right. So, you ever read, though, about like when the Russian Revolution happened? The first part of it, they had a guy named Kerensky they put in charge, and they had kind of like it wasn't communist. And the Communist Party, though, was one of the main parts. You had the Communist Party, you had what later became the Whites, and you had Kerensky's kind of provisional, you know, democratic type government. And they had like, I think, six plebiscites between the March Revolution in 1917 and then the final communist takeover in October. But in that time, they had like a series of plebiscites. The communists got beat. Every vote, people voted against them. And finally, in October, they just got their revolvers and their, you know, and their rifles and just like armed robbers just went into the, you know, into the Duma and just took over. And there was no will to resist them. So that's the danger, though, because you're right, Mac. Everything you're saying is right. The whole thing with the Senate being where the coffee cools and the hot, you know, boiling emotion of the House of Representatives is cooled, you know, by the more phlegmatic senators who originally weren't even popularly elected. They're chosen by whatever state legislature. Right. And, you know, so that was the whole point behind that. But that's something that is going now. One other thing you said, I want to just say, because I believe you're right. But one more thing, I'll shut up, is, you know, this thing with the idea about, you know, that they're going to see what the Democrats are like. I hope you're right. But listen, but when you look at it right now, they finally got to where the police forces that they've been running in most places for 50 years, these police forces in these big cities, finally they're starting to eat it themselves. They're starting to condemn the police forces that they built. So if it works, and that's what they're gambling on, then they're going to figure out another way of taking power, which probably part of it is meaning the end of our republic. But if not, then you're right. And then we do, you know, the country does stay, you know, representative republic, you know, that where everybody has a say.
All right. Any other thoughts?
None? I would say, Mac, you know, your faith in the Senate, I think, is grossly misplaced. You know, there's two senators out of 100. I don't even know how many Republicans there are anymore, 50 or 52 or something. There's two that have come out and condemned this. Hawley from Missouri and Tom Cotton.
Yep.
You know, Mitch McConnell has not come out and said, this is completely stupid. You know, that was the essence of Tucker Carlson on Friday. And also the fact that we're talking about, well, should we rename the bases? Should we do these things? Now you're completely on the defensive, because when you do that, you give credence to their insanity. You know, the truth of the matter is this is the least racist country on earth, the United States of America. It is. But the narrative is police are committing genocide, and because you're white, you're a racist. And people are bowing down before that. And, you know, when you talk about statues, they just stole our money. Any of those statues that are on public are ours. They stole from us. duly elected governments, one of the things they're supposed to do, support and defend, blah, blah, blah. They acquiesced in that theft. They're complicit in that theft. That's what people should be, you know, a Democrat should be able to stand up and say, I don't agree with what this statute represents, but I will fight to the death to make sure that if we take it away, it's done through a lawful means and not surrender to the mob. The Democrats have encouraged the mob.
Yeah, people. Oh, they
so
owe,
the idea that
pay, they need to pay their taxes back to them.
Yeah, this you know that the Senate's going to be able to do something. Yeah, I admire your optimism
Thank
in the
you.
Great American experiment.
Thank you.
I rely on the people. I don't rely on the Senate. The people are going to have to do something. Because we're actually smarter.
Well, no. Let me just say, and the reason I say that is my living in North Dakota for, you know, 14 years, right? There's much of this country, right, that elected the last president that doesn't believe in any of the fucking shit that we've seen on our televisions.
They, yeah. And right? Those are the people. Those
right?
are not the people in Washington, D.C.
All right.
The
well, next time,
are gonna
next
have
time,
to stand up and say,
next time,
no
I'll
more.
Fucking map it out for you better, Will. Okay.
Hey, guys, I
hey,
got one
reading?
Thing to say, and that is in these Democratic run cities, you know, the deal whiz with our social contract is we allow our government to have the a monopoly on the use of force, and they in turn protect us and our property and our lives. That's their fundamental number one goal. They're not doing that in those Democrat cities. And it seems to me that it's like looking at Afghanistan. It's like looking at Nangarhar province again. The politicians, they're like, they're talking, they're making all the right sounds. They're certainly getting paid on time, but the whole other, the infrastructure in the city is going to shit.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Iraq after we disbanded the police force, because you better have a weapon in your house. Because I don't know if you've heard some of the audio from some of the 911 calls. I don't know who was playing them the other night, but
yeah, it's heartbreaking, man.
Yeah, 911 call in Charleston. You know, there's 30 of us. We're locked in to a square inside the business. They're breaking the windows, and this woman is sobbing. Please, yeah. This is the third time I've called, and the dispatcher's like, "We have units in the area, ma'am. It's being worked," and you're completely dispassionate. And there's this woman saying something horrible is going to happen, and no, I mean it's so. But I have faith in the American people that there's enough people that will reject that shit.
Well, 20 years ago, we went to Afghanistan to try to make them a little bit like more like America, but it seems like we're a little bit more like Afghanistan.
Whoa.
Goddamn confusing.
I know. If you didn't have a scorecard, you wouldn't be able to tell who the players are. All right, no. What are you reading?
Ooh.
Well?
I am reading a book called A World at Arms by a guy named Gerhard Weinberg. A World at Arms, published in like 95, about 1,000-page history of World War II. You think you've read everything, and then that book I read about 3 weeks ago on the War in the Pacific, in the bibliography section, this guy cited this book as the finest one-volume history of World War II. And I'm about 100 pages into 1,000, and it's just really well written. And you don't get bogged down in it. So, A World at Arms, Gerhard Weinberg.
Tim, what are you reading?
I am finishing up the canon of T.R. Fehrenbach, and I'm reading about something that's fascinated me, which is Mexico. The book is Fire and Blood. It's a history of Mexico. I'm only 6% into it, and it reads Fehrenbach writes so well. But this reads like one of those what was the guy that used to write the big long books like on Colorado and stuff. It, you know, he's starting down in pre-Paleolithic times and working his way up.
James Michener.
Michener.
Yeah, Michener. It reads like it reads almost like a Michener book, but it's history.
I read
it's damn fascinating.
I read Poland, and he starts with Yawn of the Birch Trees and like in like 400 AD. And you're like, that's where I know my Polish and Central European history from is from that book.
Yeah, rumor has it he was, when he died, he was writing on another opus called Staten Island. Starting from prehistoric times, going up to
this goes right back there. Do you know that they found femurs of Caucasian looking people that must have been 8 foot tall in Mexico, as well as a series of pygmy people who were supposedly magicians who had negroid bones. They apparently came from Africa. There's more to hell going on. And Fehrenbach was writing this in 94, and since that time, more of this kind of stuff has turned up. Our history is fascinating. I didn't know the Aztecs didn't build those temples. Those had been built by another race 1,000 years before the Aztecs took them over, who happened to be Comanches. Apparently, migrated out of America and killed everybody and took over. It's weird, man. It's a weird history, but I'm trying to understand why Mexico is in such a failed state. And the truth is, due to geography, terrain, and weather, it's set up to be a failed state. The way that the mountains are so close to the shore and all the habitable land is at elevation inside the interior. It's an interesting country, and I want to know more about it.
All right, Jeff, what are you reading?
I'm finishing up the book Valley of Decision, which is about Quezon.
Got it.
But it's about Quezon from like, you know, late 50s all the way up till it's going to end up with Lamsam 719 or whatever, you know, that if you remember watching the Deer Hunter when they get in that catastrophe, that was early 72 time frame up around that area, you know. So
I told everybody that if they had something to wish for on Father's Day, that they should wish for a subscription to the Wall Street Journal. Now, I'm going to read you a few paragraphs here of why you should subscribe to it. You know, I think if you haven't read anything about it, the U.S. Attorney, New York,
Southern District of New York,
Berman, right, was fired by the president, right? And if you haven't read into it and you just kind of read headlines, it looks unseemly, like right here late on a Friday night, bars doing, you know, Trump's hatchet job, blah blah blah. If you haven't investigated it, and if you've read anybody's stories in mainstream media. All right, here's the Wall Street Journal. So here's the plan. We need to remove a U.S. attorney because he's investigating associates of the president. Let's wait till 4 months before the election. Let's do it on a Friday night so it looks suspicious and the guy can refuse to step down and make himself a martyr to the resistance. Yeah, that'll fool everybody. That's what the media and the Democrats want everyone to believe about President Trump's weekend dismissal of U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman. It's more accurate to say this looks like a fiasco, a bungled execution by the administration and self-indulgence by Mr. Berman that is being overplayed as an abuse of power. In other words, it's your average Trump melodrama. Mr. Berman has been the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York for more than 2 years under a judicial appointment, but was never nominated or confirmed by the Senate. Mr. Trump has every right to fire Mr. Berman as an inferior officer in the executive branch. Attorney General Bill Barr was negotiating with Mr. Berman over a transfer to another senior job on Friday when the Justice Department issued a statement that Mr. Berman was, quote, stepping down, unquote, which is standard Justice Department language in these cases. The White House said at about the same time that the president would nominate SEC Chairman Jay Clayton to replace Mr. Berman. The highly competent Mr. Clayton, a New Yorker, had planned to leave the administration but said he'd stay around for the U.S. attorney job. Mr. Berman then issued a grandstanding press release late Friday saying he wouldn't go until a successor was nominated and confirmed by the Senate. Mr. Trump finally fired him on Saturday at Mr. Barr's recommendation, and Mr. Barr said in a letter to Mr. Berman that his deputy, Audrey Strauss, would replace him until a successor was confirmed. That should end this as a legal matter. Mr. Berman doesn't have squatter's rights to the job, and there is no violation of law or abuse of power here. And then the next paragraph, and I'll stop there. The political cost is a different story. That's why I would hope that you paid attention and you told your kids or whoever that you wanted a subscription to the Wall Street Journal. That's yes. from their editorial board. That's the kind of shit that you get, which in my opinion is simply a plain view of the facts.
Right.
And that we don't see in our media. So the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
All right, boys. First of all, once again, happy Father's Day to everybody, and thank you for doing this kind of special edition. I thought the resolution of the Crozier incident merited your participation earlier in the week. I thank you for it. God bless you, and good night.
Good night.
Night, brother.
All right, more of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.